It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
I realized something this week. Your wife's been playing Control, and while you haven't been able to watch it all the time, you've watched some. So I'm betting you are familiar with my favorite thing in Control. And in fact, I think there's a better than average chance it's also your favorite thing in Control.
What would that be?
Welcome to the FBC. There's lots to do, there's lots to be, but you don't touch or know too much. Let's join the Threshold Kids. Let's join the Threshold Kids.
Yeah, it's quite bizarre. It's funny though.
It's incredibly bizarre.
Yeah.
And of course, if it's anything going through it, anything like I did, your first encounter with it is context free.
Right.
So you just get this bizarre cosmic horror based puppet show on a TV. Yeah. And you're like, what the fuck is this? And then later in the game, you find the paperwork where you find out that there's a child who lives in the Federal Bureau of Control and needs to understand things about it, but is a child. So they are actively going to create a sort of children's show to help the child learn. And this is what they came up with. Except I can't help but feel like the oldest house has messed with it somehow, because I'm like, nobody would come up with that. And it's brilliant. The puppetry is amazing. But my favorite is the, for absolutely no reason, done in this weird sort of insanity prawn boy voice theme song. Like, the theme song has that weird accent to it that no other part of the puppet show has. That's nobody's voice in the show. It just, welcome to the FBC. Let's join the Threshold Kids. I had that going through my head again, as is my wont. Every once in a while, that just pops into my head, and I'm like, holy shit, William's probably seen that. Holy shit, William probably really likes that bit because of the puppets.
Yeah, I do like that bit. But it's also weird.
You're real unstable, so I'm not hearing anything you're saying except bing, bing, hey, hey, hey.
What is going on?
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things that happens in the game that it's funny and it's interesting, but it's also baffling. So
and super creepy, as with all things in the game, super creepy. I love that game. Wish it wasn't so fucking hard, but I love that game. It's just so well done. Like, this is a very sort of popular genre these days, this sort of Lovecraftian cosmic horror shit. But they do it so tight. Like, I really buy into it. I really want to know what's going on. And like, I'm not even particularly frustrated by the inevitable lack of detail that occurs in any cosmic horror situation, because part of the nature of cosmic horror is it is unknowable. And so, like, we had two different DLCs, and I was like, hopefully we get to find out who or what the board really is. And no, we don't. We get some hints and some new details and stuff, but no, we don't. And I don't know how we could. Any answer they could give would be disappointing. It's like the scary thing you can think of is way less scary than the scary thing you don't know what it is. What kind of flavor is pink lemonade?
I think it's just, but it's colored pink.
Really? You think the color is the only difference?
It might be a little more sour than regular lemonade.
Okay, what we heard on this end is might be a little more.
I think a lot of.
Sour than regular. See, I would go the opposite. I would think it is less sour. And this is part of the problem, is there's a variety of different pink lemonade flavors in the same way that there are a variety of different lemonade flavors. So it is hard to tell, but I don't know. That's the sight is a big thing with it, like how traditional Haribo green gummy bears are strawberry flavored, and we all think they're lime flavored. But if you close your eyes, you can actually tell. But I don't know. I feel like they taste different, and I haven't been able to figure out what it is.
I mean, the pink lemonade I've had is just lemonade. It doesn't taste like anything. It's just pink.
But see, if you get the same brand, but, for example, if you took Country Time and blindfolded somebody and gave them a glass of Country Time lemonade and a glass of Country Time pink lemonade, would they be able to notice a difference?
I mean, but that's what I'm saying is I wouldn't know. I don't think I would, but maybe. I don't know. Never tried
it. We'll have to add it to our list of post-COVID projects. Blindfolding you and pouring various types of lemonade down your throat. And a rainbow of...
But if one of them is more or less... If one of them is more or less sour than the other, that's not much of a difference.
No, Trish was under the impression that pink lemonade incorporates sort of another flavor into it, which I don't know that I buy. But given I can't come up with an answer, I have no idea.
I mean, I've never noticed one.
If you have secret information about how pink lemonade works and all that, and don't just say it's lemonade that makes you aware of breast cancer, because we know. But... go to the blog and tell us, themagicaltalkinghat.com. No, I say that because I've known some famous lemonade brands that do a pink version specifically for Breast Cancer Awareness Month or whatever. Mike's Hard Lemonade put that out and stuff. So That's not the answer, people. Stop lying. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that has no plans and no foreseeable future of ending, but is stating right now, for the record, if we ever stop for any reason at any time, the real reason we will have stopped will be cancel culture. So that's who to blame if it comes up, which it probably won't, but that's definitely who did it. Or who will have did it. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 522. Happy anniversary, I should say, to you. Woo! I mean, technically it was yesterday, but you know, we always celebrate our anniversary when we have a show. So
that is true. That is true. It's officially been 10 years. Congrats. I don't. It's weird. It's weird. Like, there are a lot of fundamental aspects to my life that have occurred in less than a decade ago. So, although I did just recently realize I'm really at the point, I think, where I've lived in Iowa longer than I ever lived in Oregon, and that I've spent, I think at this point, a third of my life married, which means also basically a third of my life living in this house. And that's very trippy.
I've lived in this house on this property.
You're doing the crazy shit again. We're not getting any of this. You sound like somebody drugged you up and punched you in the mouth, and then you tried to scream sing a country song. I'm born in Provo, and then my dog left. Sorry, what were you saying?
Nothing.
No, we can hear you now. You were saying I assumed you were saying I lived on this property.
I've lived in this town on this particular private house longer than anywhere else. And the reason I specify all those things is because where I grew up, you know, I lived 18 years in that place, but I lived in two different houses. So I've got to work out. Okay. So I've lived on, I've not lived anywhere else longer than right here in this place, in this building, in this town. This is where I've lived most of my life.
I'm still not there because I moved into the home of my childhood when I was 2 months old. So a little bit longer there. And here, it'll be 16 years this June that we moved in here. So we're getting close, but not yet. I'm confident we'll reach there because I have no plans to move and couldn't afford to anyway. So for those of you just joining us, we mostly talk about how long we've lived in places. This is my wife, by the way.
Yeah.
She's making supper. I'm super psyched. That's awesome. Anyway, let me explain the show. For 10 years, we've been doing this. We have a hat. It is magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Excuse me. Folks like yourselves, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, topics, questions, comments, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. Draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show, except the parts that aren't, which is the vast majority of it. My burn's doing real good now. Did I show my burn before? Yeah, it's getting real. The Tegaderm things were awesome. It was basically, I used two of them, each of them for like 2 days. And after that, it was great. We haven't put anything on it after that.
It's doing very good. Very good.
Things are awesome. They're expensive, but they're awesome. All right. We don't even have to talk. Who did what for the week? Because I know there's no way you didn't watch the Snyder Cut, and we need to hear about this.
Well, there would most definitely be a way that I didn't watch it, because it came out early in the wee hours of the morning today, which I didn't stay up till 3 a.m. to watch it. And I might have had other things to do today besides watch it.
Oh, my. So, did you watch the Snyder Cut?
Yeah, I watched it.
I knew you watched the Snyder Cut. Give it to me.
I've got my Star Labs shirt on.
I read a review, but I won't say anything about what that said at this point. Lay it on me.
It did not need to be 4 hours.
Nothing does. Yeah. But this is how it was going to be. If Zack Snyder had not left the project, this four-hour movie is what would have shown up in theaters. That's the whole point. That's why it's a Snyder Cut. This was what he always envisioned, William.
Well, let me say this then. Had they had this very thing that I saw, and maybe like had a part one, part two kind of thing, because I think they did talk about that back in the day, that they might have Justice League be in two parts. if Justice League had been just this thing in two parts where they have one part and then a year later the other part or whatever, it would have been a lot better than what they actually had. And I did not like Man of Steel, I did not like Batman v Superman, I would have liked both of these movies. And I think most people would have. Not that I wouldn't have had problems with them. I mean, they're issues, but.
Can you compare contrast with the one that actually came out in theaters?
Well, I mean, that's hard to do because.
I mean, that's entirely the whole point of this. That's why it exists, is so that people will compare and contrast them.
Okay. Well, if sort of put on the spot about it, I don't know how you can compare them. They're like night and day, really. I mean, there's a few things in the Snyder cut, I guess, that are also in those things are different context compared from one to the other. There's virtually no basis for comparison. And I'll even say this: if you take the theatrical release and you fix some of the obvious problems, like the face problems with Henry Cavill and some of the other visual issues, which would go a long way to making the film the theatrical release less bad, it still wouldn't make it. I mean, there's like in the theatrical release, there's too many plot problems. There's too many character arc problems. There's just too many problems. And the Zack Snyder thing is 4 hours, right? So he really doesn't have an excuse, even though there are some gaps and problems with it. There's no real excuse for that to be true because it's 4 hours long. So, and it is, the plot points and the arcs are more complete and make more sense, and the problems with it are more minor problems. The theatrical release, all of the problems are fairly major problems. I mean, there's barely any basis to compare. We watched a guy a video review of it, and his opinion of it, which I don't know if I share his opinion, but his opinion was that he couldn't believe that the Snyder cut and the stuff it was stuff that Warner Brothers executives decided they weren't going to go with. He was like, this or something like it, and said, no, we're going to go with it.
You're breaking up again. We're gonna go with was as far as we got. So all of them we got. Yeah, Joss Whedon and his merry band of Marvel.
No, the point was and I think problems of people are baffled as to how back when they were thinking about what to do with Justice League. People have the impression that they had a lot of Zack Snyder's vision in front of them and that it was halfway decent, but they abandoned something that was good for something that was, to their minds, less good. So like, what was the thought prayer? But I mean, I don't know, and I can't guess. I appreciate that conversation that's being had about that, but I mean, I don't know what was there. I don't know what the executives had to work with, because it's not like if we can hold.
There definitely were reshoots. I mean, so definitely a lot of that stuff didn't exist at the time the original came out.
Right. So it's like, yeah. I don't know if we can really judge based on that, but I mean, it was better. But is it fair to
I apologize for the
Joss Whedon
duck you might be hearing in the background. That's my wife's alarm that she set. for dinner, I'm guessing. And it's on her phone, so I can't even text her. So we're just going to live with that now.
Yeah, it's not bothering me.
Hey, Trish. You left your duck out here. Famously, we can't hear each other from the very back in here, though. All right, then.
I mean, have you watched it? Or?
Oh, yeah, no, but I didn't watch the first one. I haven't watched any. First of all, I don't really care about any DC properties. Thank you.
Sorry.
Other than Wonder Woman. And if they pull off a really good Green Lantern someday, I might. Second of all, I despise Zack Snyder to a degree I can barely explain. And it used to be just as a director, but then I've heard his commentaries on why he makes things the way they are, and I also just think he sucks. Fuck that guy. To the degree that I would not have watched Justice League because too much of it would still have involved him. But also I wasn't interested beyond that. So no, I haven't, but I was very eager to see what would happen. Unfortunately, it seems to be largely as you've said, where there's just sort of no comparison. The review I read was from somebody who didn't seem to think the original was particularly great, that it was fine. And they're like, this is different. It's not better. It's not particularly worse. It definitely doesn't need to be 4 hours, but it's just different, but about the same quality probably. And they talked about like things they thought were good and then things they thought were bad.
Well, there's definitely bad things.
I mean, that's a huge thing. You're like, I can't even compare them, but now you're like, oh, this one's definitely better. I don't know how to break it to you. That's a very specific comparison.
It can't help but be compared a little more favorably for the fact that the person who made it had a lot more time, right? And, you know, also they had, and it's not just the time they had to present it 4 hours, it's the time they had to make it, right?
Yeah.
What I mean by it's not fair to compare is Joss Whedon didn't have a lot of time to prepare what he made. He only had a little bit of time to present what he made. So if you're asking like objectively from a craft or artistic point of view, which is better, I don't see how one can compare. But from a viewer experience, obviously, you know, 4 hours where there's some actual character development and plot development and things like that, I mean, it's going to seem better. I mean, to me.
Well, I mean, you could definitely do that and make a worse movie.
That's true. But
my point is, I think you are correct. Well, I mean, I don't know if you're correct about better or not. I think you are correct that there are a lot of extenuating circumstances. So it's very hard to compare in terms of auteurship because of what's going on. However, saying you can't really compare them and then later saying one is better, that's comparing them. Definition.
And I'm trying to explain to you that I wasn't contradicting one context when I said one thing in a different context than another. Like if I were a critic and I was offering a critique that was based on what I thought the craft of it was, or you were going to compare Zack Snyder's work versus Joss Whedon's work, or you know, I was telling you about this guy who we watched who thought, I can't believe the executives liked what this guy did rather than what this guy did. in that context, the conversation about one being better than the other, I don't know how someone could objectively base that. If we're talking about you personally, me, William, and my viewing experience of it, which you're
weirdly,
right.
Weirdly is what I meant when I said, tell us what you thought and compare and contrast the two.
I don't just think in terms of that. I mean, to me, a question doesn't mean just one thing. It can mean all kinds of different things. And so I'm going to answer it in all six right. different ways, depending on which hat I'm wearing.
I see. So you didn't understand what I specifically meant when I asked you.
Well, I probably, what you specifically meant, no. So I answered in six different ways.
Eventually.
Different ways I thought you could have meant what you were asking. And I was
eventually.
And I was mixing them all up. And
I mean, you started with a very specific way. And it was only after I added in more things that then you gave this other way. Sorry, this is a semantic argument. It is not helpful. And I've had 2 hours of sleep. So I just feel this is incredibly unproductive. So what you're saying makes sense. And what I've heard seems similar. And the only point I'm arguing on is that I think you misspoke, whereas you're making the argument that, no, you were just saying it in a specific context. Whereas if you'd said, I was probably a little glib and I shouldn't have said it that way, I would have been unsurprised. And this is a conversation we've had many, many times, and it's never a productive argument.
Actually, there were three different contexts that I was talking about.
The other
context was, as I said, if it was released in theaters in two parts, I felt like it would have done better than the original. I felt like people would have liked it better. And I felt like I would have liked it better personally. To me, that's a whole other context than the other two that I was
I didn't remember
about.
You saying people would have liked it better. I knew you said you thought it would have been better that way. I guess I didn't get the comparison to the original.
Part of the problem is my thoughts and and the things I'm trying to say are being interrupted by the technical issues we're having, and I lose track of what I'm saying and whatever.
In the many, 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 many years I have known you, I have frequently misunderstood you, and you've had to explain your situation, which makes sense. And as I know you well enough, I understand that's a common thing. The one thing I have never heard you say is, you know what? I misspoke. I should have said this. And so after a while, I'm like, maybe you just misspoke. Maybe it doesn't always have to be you're not understanding what I'm saying.
I've said that I've misspoke before.
I don't ever recall it. But again, very little sleep. And it's not a useful. I'm being pissy for no reason.
It seems like right on this podcast, I've said, I know that's what I said, but that I shouldn't have said it that way. I should have said it this way. Because I do that all the time. I constantly say things the wrong way. In fact, that's one of my big complaints about being on the podcast is because I'm thinking about how am I going to say something on the air, and I'm trying to say something all at once, and I constantly misspeak. And I especially notice it listening later. And sometimes I'll put in the notes, that's not what I meant to say. I misspeak all the time.
I believe that.
If I've never said so, that would surprise me because I do it all the time. I know that I do.
I must be misremembering then. If you know, tell us in the blog, the magic talking how it got done. I'm willing to absolutely acknowledge the possibility, the decent possibility that I'm wrong. Honestly, I'm in the worst mood I've been in ages today and probably shouldn't be doing a podcast. I so don't want to talk about it. But let's just say a lot of it is sleep deprivation. And I was going to do the fake it till you make it thing. So we didn't have this, but I have failed. So let's go on from here. How's the rest of your week been since this only happened today?
Fine. I mean, we finished watching, we went through all of the Muppet shows and that was fun.
Oh, you went through all of them. All right. You're done with it.
Yep.
Are you going to rewatch?
I don't know. Probably. It's probably one of those things where, we've got time to kill, or, and, you know, these are only 20 minutes and we want to watch something that's going to, you know, put us in a better mood or something. Of course, I don't know. Here's the thing. There's the sort of temptation to watch like the ones that you like best, you know, after you've watched them all, say, okay, well then let's just watch these.
Yeah.
But I get a very particular experience from just not doing that, from just watching them in order, and even letting, you know, allowing myself to watch some that aren't my favorite or that actually weren't very good. Because I don't know, it feels more like actually going to a show where sometimes it's not good, you know, and you laugh at it or you adjust to it.
We were all raised with, I mean, we all, by which I mean you and I, were raised with broadcast television, and you didn't get to pick what episode you were watching that week. Right. It was the episode that was on there. And for the most part, unless it was like, oh, I fucking hate this one, you were like, all right, I'm going to watch this one because it's my only option. And so that has a verisimilitude to it. I get that with The Simpsons because I have the ability to watch any of them. And especially if I tend to watch the ones I like the most, I'm now bored with those. And so it's like refreshing novelty to watch one that I've only seen twice. So no, I absolutely get that.
Yeah. So maybe we'll watch certain ones, or maybe we'll just start all over, but we have watched them all. I feel pretty confident that there are some that I did not see before. I feel pretty confident about that. So that was interesting.
That's kind of cool.
That felt like it was the first time. There are two episodes that aren't on Disney Plus at all. One is the Brooke Shields episode, I believe because of copyright problems with the songs that they had in it.
Okay. Yeah.
We have that on a DVD, so we can watch that whenever we want. And the other one is one I don't remember. Like, I've looked things up about it to see if there's anything in it that I can remember, and I do not remember it. I don't, maybe this is another one that I didn't see, but to my knowledge, the reason it's been removed is because the guy that they had on there has in the ensuing years been convicted of having like child pornography on his computer or something. And so
that could definitely happen. There's been a,
his episode,
especially if he's British, there's been a rush of DJs and show presenters from the 70s unearthing a whole bunch of horrible things about them, and they have tried to sort of take them out of the picture in a lot of ways.
Some of the shows that had the warning, the big warning in front of it, you know, did you hear about that?
Yeah, we talked about that on here, I think.
Yeah, some of the shows that had the big warning in front of it, I had to like research to figure out the precise thing that they were doing the warning about.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I didn't have to. Sometimes it was pretty obvious. But like one of them was, I'm pretty sure what the problem was the opening number was Swanee River, which I didn't realize was a controversial piece of music. But it was interesting because what the research that I did and the articles I found suggested that Swanee River it's okay if a Black person is performing it, especially in the context of it being like a song that a slave would appreciate or sing, that's okay. But a white person singing it is not okay. Or I suppose even a person of color singing it in the wrong attitude or something.
I think there's quite a lot of songs. And of course, slave spirituals are a great example, but Porgy and Bess and other things like that are written sort of explicitly in a dialect, for lack of a better term, and to have a white person affect that, at best feels like a cultural appropriation, and at worst feels like doing a weird racist caricature. That being said, that in a lot of these contexts, a white person is the one who wrote it. And also, that being said, Swanee River and several numbers from Porgy and Bess were sung by me and other people in high school, all of us white. And in retrospect, it's pretty ridiculous to watch this absolute lily white girl singing, "Porgy, I is your woman now."
Right. Well, I mean, that's, yeah, it wasn't very long ago. And when I say not very long ago, I mean like 5-6 years ago, where, you know, you, any kind of choir recital or concert or whatever, and for what the choir was singing, especially here in Iowa, mostly white people, and it would be introduced as a Negro spiritual or something. I mean, that's the terminology that was used even to introduce the song. And then when they sang the song, they set like the affectations. And I remember even when I was like in high school and I would see that kind of thing or hear that kind of thing, I remember thinking, but it didn't bother, it didn't seem to bother anybody. And like I said, up to about 5 or 6 years ago, it's like, I would still see people doing this and be like, is this okay? But they were doing it. So I don't know.
I remember thinking it was fine. I can't get back into that mindset because I definitely don't think it's fine now. And I'm like, why did I think this was okay? I mean, again, my high school choir sang "Shut D Do, Keep Out D Debo," which was a hell of a tune, but was really weird for us, all of us white kids, to be singing it like that, because that's how we sang it. Shut D Do, Keep Out D Debo.
Yeah.
And we like we had to work on that. We were taught to enunciate it just like that. And we thought that song was awesome and hilarious. And now I'm like, wow, what the fuck were we thinking?
So can I ask? I mean, maybe this is a dumb question, but like I said, even back in the day, I wasn't like I'm not saying I was offended by it. Like, oh gosh, this is racist. I'm saying I didn't understand the concept of, you know, why do it this way? I mean, I don't know if I thought it was racist or not, but I just know that it wasn't so much about racism as it was about, you know, like,
and I think the argument would have been authenticity, that the lyrics to that song are not "shut the door, keep out the devil." The lyrics to that song are "shut D Do, keep out D Debo." Essentially, it's a different language, for lack of a better term there. A pidgin, if you will.
I mean, I guess, but I mean, like,
and a lot of them come from musicals like, in which you were playing a very racist stereotype, of course, like Happy Talk in South Pacific, things like that. And Porgy and Bess, the whole, like, Porgy and Bess was an opera about black people meant to be performed by black people. It has since been performed many times by white people, which is nuts.
Well, I mean, I think one of the things that I thought about at the time was there were songs that I knew of or that we would perform or whatever that people kind of acknowledged were derived from cultures in the South. And when someone from the South sang those songs, it sounded a very particular way, but the lyrics weren't written out to make the vocalists sound like they were from the South.
No.
So it's like, but so you're not making people have the affectation of a Southerner singing this Southern song. Like, I don't know. I can't think of a good example, but if it's a song that you think black people sang, you're changing the affectation. So
yes. And in a related note, I don't believe any college has ever had courses on Southern linguistic enunciation, but there have been tons of courses, or not anymore, but there were tons of courses on Ebonics. Remember Ebonics?
Yeah, I do.
That's what it was. These songs aren't in English. They're in Ebonics. It's racism. It's absolutely just racism. But
was there an effort?
Yeah, we weren't aware at the time.
Was there an effort also to, like, I mean, like a song that had its origins in, say, Jamaica, for people to sing it with Jamaican affectations? Also, was that a thing?
It's still a thing. It's a thing now. Listen to any white person sing any Bob Marley song. Listen to any white person sing any reggae song, including white people who write and perform their own reggae songs. And they do that.
To me, this is a interesting thing, and I'm not quite sure how to categorize it in my head, because, like I said, this, I've always been curious about this, like, you know, why anybody would, like the example you use, why wouldn't a person just sing? In fact, now that you mention it and I'm thinking about it, I had a friend who used to sing that song because they sang it in choir, and they did sing it, lock the door, keep out the devil. They didn't have any affectations when they sang.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, why would you? But at the same time, if you are going to have affectations in it, like I said, my first response is it's weird just because I think it's weird. It's the consideration of whether or not it's racist is kind of one step beyond that for my thinking process. But it does seem racist, and you think it's racist.
I do, based on exactly what we've talked about. The fact that if you look at the instances where it comes up, you will notice a certain similar aspect to each of those situations. And when you look at the times when it doesn't come up, you'll notice a similarity there too. And it's racialized. I will bet in the 90s, the musicians could have given you reasons that had nothing to do even with accent. Talk about, no, it's the way the rhythm and the sound of this song, it's purely aesthetic sound issues why we sing it this way. But as you pointed out, there's plenty of traditional, occasionally you get a traditional Southern tune or whatever, and like, they leave the G off the end. And I mean, you get that, but you certainly don't have it written in a whole bunch of different things. Although, you know, you can make an argument that rural, poor Southerners who are white also are oppressed peoples in a different sort of way, socioeconomically oppressed, at least.
Can I ask you a related question?
Probably. We'll see if it's related.
Okay. All right, so let's bring up The Simpsons as an example. What's the actor who used to do Abu in?
Hank Azaria.
Hank Azaria, okay.
And he doesn't. Not Abu.
Why? Apu, okay. So I don't know who does that character now. Or is the character just gone?
I don't think he's shown up since they changed it. They've changed some other characters. There are black characters on the show that are now voiced by black voice actors.
Okay, well, let me use this as an example because, well, there's not really a because. It just seems like a more obvious example. So let's say that, you know, they decide, you know what, a white guy shouldn't be doing this voice, you know, that we shouldn't do that anymore. And so he stops. And they find a person who is the same ethnicity as the character.
Mm-hmm.
And when they voice that character sounds practically identical to what the performance that was done before.
Mm-hmm.
how does that, I mean, what am I trying to say? So, and of course that would be considered fine. I mean, this is, you know, this is a Indian character voiced by an Indian actor who has what we would all recognize as an Indian accent, but the person who was doing it before was also doing an Indian accent. I mean, Indian accents are real things.
In this thought experiment, yes. I guarantee you, if an Indian person started doing Apu Nahasapima Pedalon, it would sound absolutely nothing like the way Hank Azaria did it, regardless of who they were. But for this thought experiment, let's say that. And I mean, like I said, Simpsons has other examples. The character of Carl, the character of Dr. Hibbert, both of these have recently changed to black voice actors, and the voices are, you can tell it's a different person, but there's not really a different quality to it.
So is it bad then for a person to adopt the vocal affectations of another ethnicity or another race or another whatever, you know, just as a matter of reproducing that affectation? Is that inherently bad?
One could make that argument, I think. Some people probably do. I don't think that's the main issue here. Hmm. The issue here is pure economic representation. It's white people get way more than their percentage of jobs in, it's the same thing as casting a person of color on television as well for a role that was not explicitly mentioned. It, there are not enough black voice actors getting paid a reasonable amount. And when you have perfectly competent black voice actors to instead cast this black character as a white, from a white voice actor, is essentially to whitewash. It's the same. Yeah, you get it with any.
I feel the same way about. Yeah, I was going to say, I feel the same. I think that about, like, sometimes I get, it bothers me quite a bit when a heterosexual actor is cast for a gay role.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that they can't play a gay role.
No.
That's not the point. The point is that there are gay people who are actors who could do this job who aren't getting this job.
It's like, and it happens with trans characters. It happens I mean, there has recently been a big issue about it because it happened with an autistic character in a movie that just came out. And there was a lot of backlash to that. And in a non-animated context, there is also the aspect of visual representation of people's right and need to be able to see themselves on the screen. And the animated component doesn't necessarily have that. But the bit about there are plenty of people in this demographic working in the industry and they are losing these jobs to white people, even though the character in question isn't a white person, that stays with the animated thing as well. I think it can very much creep into a cultural appropriation issue, particularly if one of my favorite voice actors, John DiMaggio, has done a lot of black character voices, and one could argue some of them were quite over the top.
Exaggerated, I don't know, and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, one could argue it. I might choose to argue it. It's debatable because the thing you want to do is like, okay, so if I can find one black dude who sounds like this, clearly I'm making a realistic accent. It's like, well, no, I mean, not necessarily. And it becomes a very tricky thing because, you know, does this become a thing if you adopt a Southern accent of a white dude? Like, is that a thing? Well, in some cases it could be, the whole hillbilly characterization is a huge one. You know, the poor white trash characterization. These are also arguments. And it becomes about who has the representation and who has the political and economic power. So it's never entirely cut and dried, but the idea that, hey, if you've got people from that demographic in the field, capable and willing to do the work, why the hell are you not picking from them?
Sure, and it can get complicated with voice acting because many times in a voice acting cast, a person's doing more than one thing, right? So you're hiring 10 people to do 20 voices.
Absolutely.
You know, and if you, you know, it's just complicated. It can get complicated when, oh, well, sometimes a character might be added after the fact or whatever. And you as the animator, let's say you're the animator and you say, hey, we could make this a character of color for representation purposes. But then the voice caster has to say, but we've already got our black person doing 6 voices.
Yeah.
So we can't have them do another.
Or we don't have a black person. This is the first time this has come up. Do we hire a person just for this?
Yes.
And this is, and you know, there is an economic, if you're working dirt poor and you can't afford to pay more than 3 people, and for a long time the Simpsons was the main family and then every other character was handled by basically 4 people: Tress MacNeille, Harry Shearer, the guy who does Homer, and Hank Azaria. And that was like hundreds of characters, and at the time maybe that was necessary. The Simpsons is big money now. The Simpsons brings in celebrity guests all the time. Like it's absolutely not necessary. And in most cases, it's not necessary. Very rarely, unless you're an indie thing that really can't afford it. And even then, like, I'm not saying the idea of we could not afford to hire a black person for this one character is not a valid argument. What I'm going to say is it's a real tough argument, and one that you... it's not going to come up very often. And if it does come up, you might be able to look at other aspects and find ways to resolve it that are better. Like maybe, why didn't your original 4 people include a black person? You know, that kind of thing. But now the revenge is complete because the new show on Fox, the animated show, The Great North, includes a character of Moon, who is a 10-year-old, I'm going to say boy, he's kind of non-gendered in a way and named Moon, but I think it's a boy, 10-year-old boy, white boy, who is voiced by Indian American comedian Aparna Nancherla, who I love to death, and she steals the show for me. And I love that there's an Indian woman doing the voice of this 10-year-old white boy. So that's
we should get to
a question, because we didn't get to a question last week. They're gonna riot.
But you didn't talk about your week.
Yeah, we'll have to save it for next week. It was a bunch of movies. I'll talk about them then. None of them are particularly time sensitive.
Okay.
No, you have nothing to apologize for. I basically had almost no ability to cope with reality today from jump. And what little I had disappeared throughout the day. So I apologize to you and to the listeners for me losing my shit, hopefully I'll sleep more and it will be better. Dave of Id says, which streaming service would you prefer to produce future episodes of The Magical Talking Hat?
What, like this, like on YouTube kind of thing?
I guess, yeah. If some company was actually going to buy us. That's a tough one. There's a lot of factors.
What are they?
Which streaming service has content into which we would be appropriate? I don't think we could do Disney because I swear too much. And talk about butts. Which streaming service would be the likely to keep us going and not cancel us? So like Netflix might not be a good call because they famously will give you a second season, but won't hardly ever give you a third season. Which streaming service isn't evil? So, like, I don't think I want to do Amazon, because as much as I have hitched my wagon to that as a consumer, Amazon fucking sucks, and I don't want to be a part of them. So, and who's going to pay us best? So there's a lot of things to consider.
I see.
I mean, it's probably YouTube, but the problem with YouTube is, if YouTube's doing it, then it's going to go behind YouTube's paywall. And I don't want that. I want the hat to be free to all children.
What about Hulu?
I mean, Hulu's basically Disney, but we'd get away with the swearing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, sort of, if we got to take it out of the big ones, Hulu's probably the place to go. But again, I feel like we lose a whole... We could also do Paramount Plus, but I feel like we lose a whole chunk. Netflix is a little more ubiquitous. Yes, you have to pay for it, but I feel like everybody fucking has Netflix. So not a lot of people would lose that. Same with Amazon. I mean, out of the big ones, probably...
Peacock or something and have ads.
Oh! I like that. We could be Peacock on the free side of things with ads. I love that for... Because it'd be free, and the cost would be minimal, so there's no reason for them to not keep doing it. And I would love to see who would buy ad space on our show. I would be super psyched to see that.
I think it'd probably more be an issue of seeing which people pull ads from our show.
I mean, we got to get them first.
Yeah, but I'm not... Do you think people on Peacock... say, hey, put our ads on these things?
Or do they say, put out some ads, but not on this one? But not on this show, because we hate this show. You froze up, so I'm going to assume you agree with me.
Yeah.
That's usually how I feel about things.
That seems...
I mean, I still would love to see it. I would love to see it.
And then they only pull ads.
Didn't expect it to go this way, but probably Peacock. I mean, ultimately, I also would like Dropout, just because then I might get to rub shoulders with some of the coolest people out there making content now. But that's not a good one, because most people don't have access to that. Although a lot of their stuff does end up on YouTube, so maybe we'd be in that camp. But no, I think it's Peacock, which didn't see that coming. Kind of surprised. But I think it is a solid argument.
Coming.
I mean, if we, as soon as I read this question, if somebody had been like, gun to your head, pick what it's going to be, Peacock wouldn't even been on the list. But I think you're right. I think it makes sense. I think it fits most of the criteria. There is the fact that it is NBC, which means ultimately we would take on to ourselves some sort of generational curse that seems to exist with basically anything NBC does since 2000. So, I mean, NBC cannot seem to catch a break. But otherwise, no.
Plus, when we make the movie of our careers, it'd probably have to be Universal picture.
Yeah.
Which means we could make Tony and William Meet Frankenstein movie.
And that's where I knew you were going. I knew. I was like,
Tony and William,
which means we could meet the Wolfman. Yeah. Shudder recently put a bunch of old from like the 20s and 30s movies on there. Cabinet, Dr. Caligari, and stuff like that. Not the Universal monsters, but older ones. I found that interesting. I might check some of those out. Any of you listeners subscribe to Shudder, tell me about it in the blog, because there's a lot of exclusive stuff to Shudder, and I like to talk about it. I think it's a good service if you like horror, which I do, but I also worry that like literally no one involved in listening to this podcast has that service, and it's really pointless for me to tell you about stuff on there. So let me know. All right. So we survived this. So good on us. Next week I will be much better rested. I'm sure. Or COVID will finally have just destroyed me completely. One of those will happen. So tune in next week so you can find out which one. Because that's going to be exciting. But even if I get COVID and die from it, and William's not going to do the podcast without me, he wouldn't actually even know how. So even if that's what happens, the reason we stopped, remember, cancel culture.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.